Bob McCown, it's John Shannon, and midweek has arrived, and we march through the Stanley Cup playoffs, the NBA playoffs, the Major League Baseball season, teams approaching 60 games, the mark at which general managers allegedly start talking to each other.
Allegedly.
About possible deals. And so a lot of generic stuff to discuss. Anything specifically on your mind this day, Mr. Shannon?
No, other than the, just a quick note that with all our consternation on the Monday show about what Kyle Dubas should have done, can do, will do, might not be able to do, Lou Lamoriello's team's on the verge of going to the third round if they beat the Boston Bruins Wednesday night. So that's and they were very impressive in their win in Boston, albeit with three power play goals, in Boston on Monday night.
Well, this would be considered a minor surprise, I think, if the Islanders knocked off the Bruins, but not a major one, I don't think.
No, but if you look at the second half of the season, the Islanders did not play very well. And it, you know, it's interesting.
These are the Montreal Canadiens.
You beat me to it. Yeah, that teams that played very hard the second half of the season, the Bruins were one of them. Florida was one of them. Obviously, Colorado and Vegas are teams that played hard through the second half of the season. But the Islanders kind of scuffled. I think there's a lot of people panicking that what is Barry Trotz doing? But boy, oh boy, oh boy, he's done the one thing that a lot of people were hoping he could do, and that was ignite Matthew Barzal, who was told that he, you know, he had to buy into the system, but he couldn't use his individualistic skills as much. But Barzal has been spectacular, particularly the last three games.
You know my opinion of the merit of coaches.
Yes.
In general.
Mm-hmm.
But the Islanders' performance, and when we reflect on Trotz's entire career as a coach, there is obviously something there that allows him to get the most out of whatever collection of players his general manager manages to give him. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what that is?
I would say that Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz are two peas in a pod, in that what they do is they make it pretty straightforward to the players, their expectations, and then they demand the accountability. So I guess my answer to that is structure and accountability. Those are the two things that make a difference for both guys. And, you know, it's funny, they didn't really know each other very well until this venture on the island. Trotz, of course, was the Stanley Cup champion coach in Washington. So from that perspective, I guess the answer is structure and accountability. And it's not hard. All you have to do is play by the rules. And as you well know, that's always been Lou's mantra as well.
Well, Trotz's Stanley Cup in Washington was done with a collection of highly skilled players who had, prior to his arrival, arguably underachieved, or maybe just weren't ready to win a Stanley Cup. But he did not have an overwhelmingly talented group in Nashville.
No.
And he does not have an overwhelmingly talented group on Long Island.
Yeah, There are some guys.
You know, I'm not saying, John, I'm not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination they don't.
I mean, they're not a lunch bucket crew, Bob.
No, I get that. But he manages to find ways. And maybe it belies my argument that coaches don't matter that much. But he is, I mean, it's a small list of guys that over the extended course of a coaching career are able to achieve beyond what the expectations are. Let me put it that way. And he's one of those guys.
Absolutely.
I'd love to know what the secret sauce is.
Well, I'll tell you what, the owner of the Washington Capitals, who decided not to give Barry Trotz the raise he deserved after winning the cup, probably wants to know what that secret sauce is too, because he's already gone through two coaches there. So, since
our guest today is gone back home, for lack of a better term. John Davidson left the Columbus Blue Jackets to go to the New York Rangers. That didn't work out. He's gone back to Columbus. He'll join us. He needs a coach. Any chance of reunion with Tortorella? Any chance of
There's another former Blue Jackets coach out in the market's done pretty well recently. So, Gerard Gallant.
Oh, there you go. With a world championship.
Huh? Yeah, yeah.
We'll talk to John Davidson, JD, next after these messages. We are back. It's McCown. It's Shannon. And here's our pal, John Davidson, is back with us, the president of hockey operations once again for the Columbus Blue Jackets.
It's an annual thing.
Well, this is a move that nobody could have anticipated, including you, I assume. But I always got the sense you were pretty happy in Columbus.
Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed Columbus. Had an opportunity, though, to go to New York. I'd been there so long for as a player, as a broadcaster. Yeah. Years and years and years, decades actually, and took a run at it. Obviously, the owner, Mr. Dolan, decided to make some changes. He's right. Yeah, I actually enjoyed working for Jim and the Garden and people around the Rangers. It was terrific, and I think the team was on a pretty good trajectory to be where it's supposed to be as you go through the build, but didn't work out. So I had some decisions to make. A lot of people said, go away, take a vacation, take a lot of time and relax and then make your mind up. But the phone started to ring and there was opportunities, 4, 5, 6 different opportunities. And after long conversations at home, Columbus just seemed to be the right spot. It's a great city, great ownership. Team needs some work, so we're going to go to work.
Are you surprised that Columbus came back to you at all? I mean, obviously your departure was amicable. It was your decision.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, yes and no, you know, I had left them. So you kind of, you wonder what their feelings were, but it was wonderful when I did leave, the terms about every aspect of it. And, you know, I've always, since I got to Columbus, I didn't know a lot about the city other than going in with the team and leaving after games, stuff like that. Once I got there and realized that the quality of life in that city is about as good as it gets anywhere that I know of. And that's part of why we went back after they called. Mike Priest was the president of the club itself. He's in between myself and the ownership. And we had a great talk. Talked to my wife. The one factor, too, is we have a daughter in St. Louis. She's a doctor at the Children's Hospital there. Her and her husband have 3 little boys. They're under 5 years of age. I have another daughter in Canton, Michigan. They have 2 little boys under 5. So it's 5 grandsons. We go to Columbus. They're right down the road on both sides. It's a perfect fit for us.
So, let's face it, that first week of May until you agreed to go to Columbus was a bit of a whirlwind. Can you remember any of it?
It was. You know, you get let go. After I went in and had a great conversation with Jim, Dolan, and he had made his mind up. There was no changing it. So that's hockey. That's the business. So we shook hands and I left, came home, talked to my wife, and I'd never been let go. I was traded once as a player.
Welcome to the club.
48 years in the league. I never let go. I didn't quite know what to think of this thing. So, we're in a good position, got home and then the phones, you know, what happens, you know, so many people, John, including yourself, that, they call and wish you well, and how you do, but geez, the texts and the phone calls, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them and you want to return every single one and do your business the right way. And then when that ends, you know, there's others that do keep calling like yourself, it kind of just stops. And then, you know, you start thinking about, well, maybe at this age, 68, maybe we'll just retire. Might be, you know, that time. Then I go, Jesus, that'd be good for a while. But come September, I'm going to miss this job or something to do with hockey. TV companies called, other teams called. And so I just said, you know what, let's just make a decision. Away we go.
By the way, the fact you're fired, you actually get a secret decoder ring now? You're in the club.
Well, there's quite a few in the club from Madison Square Garden.
No kidding.
There's a few from Rogers too. So.
Well, I'm intrigued by your very kind words about Mr. Dolan, which I've never met the man. Yeah. John, have you?
Yes. Mr. Dolan?
Yeah.
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you first. Like, what's your perception of the man?
He's a whirling dervish. He's a whirling dervish, and you know, in my time, I have worked for individual owners. I know individual owners, and they're different. And it's one of the reasons that allows them to be rich, and it's another reason that allows them to be so unpredictable. I mean, the times I've met him, he has never had an ill word about anything. But he's on a different plane than other people, as most entrepreneurial people like that are. And so it's one of those things, as John said, once somebody like this gets it in his mind, this is what he's doing, it's too late to convince him otherwise.
Well, Mr. Davidson, is he the irrational, crazy person that he is depicted as being in most parts of the media? I mean, is that your experience?
Well, you know what? There's a real private side to Jim Dolan, which is very, he does a lot of things for a lot of people that people don't know about. He has that ability to do that, and he does it, which is a really good thing. When he makes his mind up, he makes his mind up. Mm-hmm. There's others, you know, that have been through the same situation as myself. I will say this, and this is the reality of it, is that when you work for the Rangers or you run the Rangers, you have everything at your fingertip that you need to run a franchise. There's no cutting corners whatsoever. So that's something that, you know, if you need something, you need to add this, do that, buy that, do this. Absolutely. If it helps us win, do it, including minor league team and everything else. So I can't sit here and be critical. I mean, it's pretty simple. This is tough for owners when you go through a rebuild. And you're going to have the ups and the downs in a rebuild. And the thing that I told our guys was, when we go through the downs, and there's going to be some, everybody around you is going to lose their minds. They're going to really get upset about the way things are going. And we have to keep ours in the proper spot. And then when we climb out of it, it's going to be really, really good. And we just didn't get there. And, you know, I think that Chris Drury, who's now the president general manager, he's inherited a good situation. He's made a lot of changes, and he'll continue, I think, to do that. But team-wise, what's coming, what's there already, they're in a good spot.
John,
the organization is in a good spot.
Before we talk about your old new team, how much did the Tom Wilson episode have to do with anything that went on?
Nothing. Zero. Zero. The only thing I will say that when the statement came out about the Rangers being upset with the situation, that was nothing to do with myself or Jeff Gordon. That came from the Rangers, the top, and that's what they felt like saying. But no. I think that we knew that as you go through this build, we knew we needed help at this position, that position. Maybe toughness for sure, but the point is, you just can't run out and get it. You have to find a way to do it. We had played Washington plenty of times. We had beaten Washington. I think we were 4-2 at one point playing against Washington this season. And Tom plays hard, and that situation just blew up. But it had nothing to do with what happened to us.
So now you head back to Columbus, and maybe at the top of the list of things to do is to find another coach. Mm-hmm. During your absence, their coach decided to walk away. And if I'm not mistaken, you brought Torts in there, did you not?
Right, myself, and I was with Jarmo Kekäläinen and Bill Zito, but I had known Torts for a long time. Did a good job for us in Columbus.
It's more pertinent now than it would have been a couple of months ago, JD, right. But give me your take on Tortorella as a coach and as a guy to work with.
Oh, I enjoyed work. In fact, I talked to him last night. He's back here. He owns a property probably a half an hour north from where I'm living right now in New York. And he's fostering and taking care of horses and dogs, a beautiful piece of property. In fact, I was up there during the pandemic and took my wife and dog up there. We sat in his property while he was back in Columbus just to get out of the house. We were stuck in here for months. And it was great. We sat there and had a little lunch. It was beautiful, beautiful piece of property. Left, got driving down the road, and there's this guy on the left, and he's jogging, and he's kind of, his body's all over the place a little bit, tall guy, kind of. He just didn't look like a jogger, but he was jogging. And I drove by slow, and I turned around and looked. It was David Letterman. Big white beard, the body going all over the place. Beautiful area of the world, though. But with Torts is a good coach. In fact, at times he can be a great coach. He's won Coach of the Year more than once. He's a load, though. He's a load. He's emotional. He can get emotional and say things that he shouldn't be saying. And you got to talk to him, and he realizes it. But when it comes down to coaching and loyalty, he's really good at it. Really good at it.
Is he worth the work?
Yeah, I think so. I really do. But the thing is, and I think this any coach in the NHL will tell you, there's been very few that have lasted in one city for a long, long period of time. Barry Trotz was one of those guys in Nashville that lasted a long time. And there's very few of those. But others do have a shelf life. That's just what it is. And they will tell you that themselves. And I think with Torts probably felt it was time to move on. So they both sides shook hands, and Torts left town.
There are plenty of coaches available now with NHL experience. I'm sure you have, I assume you haven't started the process at all, have you?
Yeah, we have. Yeah, we're right in the middle of it, actually. The Zoom thing, the face-to-face thing, it's been going pretty hard for the last 10 days or so.
What are the qualities you're looking for?
Qualities. I think what's important is to get a person that is an understanding person of players that need to be pushed, players that don't need to be pushed. Today's players are a little different. And in my opinion, it's got to be a coach that's going to fit our team as is and be part of the progression that we need to show, and also a coach that the players are going to really be excited about working with. So it's kind of putting the glove on, you know, that glove's got to fit. It's got to fit on both sides of what you're trying to do. Communication skills for sure. Understanding who his staff's going to be so your specialty teams can take care of business. Somebody that's, you know, one thing I found, guys, over the last number of years in this business is players today really like honesty. They don't want to be fed a pile of bull. They want honesty. And maybe it depends on how you deliver it. Sometimes you deliver it to a certain player in a harsh way. Another player may, don't do that, but deliver it differently. And the honesty aspect of it all is really what the players thank you for.
In the 15 years that you've been hiring coaches since you went to St. Louis, has that changed what the concept of what a coach should be?
That's a really good question. I mean, you look at Gerard Gallant, who hasn't coached for a while, then he goes over in a short tournament, does a good job with Canada, obviously. So he knows how to deal with people. I think that's probably more demanding because of social media and things like that. So you really have to understand how you go about your business and how you keep certain things in-house, other things you talk about, whether it's public or not. That aspect of it certainly has changed. I think players today are probably coached better for longer in all the countries, all of the different countries, because you have to remember that when you're finding a coach for a team, it's just not a coach from Canada or a coach from the United States. You're dealing with Swedes, Finns, Russians, Slovaks, Czechos, it goes on and on and on, Canadians, Americans. So you have to have somebody and his staff that can deal with all those different things. And that's really important. That's different from a number of years ago by a mile. social media, as I mentioned, is different than what it was by a mile. Preparation, how you do it. Can you overcoach, undercoach? There's more skills coaches today with teams. I know in Columbus, we hired Kenny McCutton. He's really good at it. And we may have been the first team to hire a full-time skills coach at the time. And man, does that help? So there's a whole lot of difference than what it used to be. When you interview them, a lot of them, when you get into the X's and O's, they're pretty similar. They all know the game, the coach, they understand the actual on-ice X's and O's. They may deliver it a bit differently, but it's a lot of it's the same. But you get that gut feeling whether or not you're going to have somebody that's going to make a difference or not. You got to go with your gut and your management team with their guts too.
In terms of style and overall preparation for putting a team together, does your coach have to fit what you want, or are you amenable to whatever the coach brings to the table and says, this is the way I want to do it?
That's a really good question. That's why you go through this process with the interviews. I think the general manager and the coach, or whoever else there is, they have to respect each other's opinions. And the coach is the coach. He's hired to coach. Coaches generally, they want to win today. They don't care about tomorrow. However, in certain situations, and I'd put ours there, we're not a championship team right now, but we intend to. But there's a damn process you have to go through. An example would be we have 3 first rounders this year. They're not going to play right now. We've got 3, maybe 4 really, really good Russian players coming over. You know, you've got to be able to deal with the Russian athlete a little bit different. So when we have these discussions, everything's on the table. I do not want to have a coach that's going to come in and not understand what our franchise is about, where we are, how we want to get to where we're going to get to, and only have him live for today. It doesn't work like that with us. So we have those discussions when we talk about possible coaches for the team, and it's gone pretty well that way. It's gone very well.
How you know, in previous lives, you've been able to sit in the same room a lot with a new coach, with a coaching candidate. How's the Zoom aspect changed any of this?
You know, I didn't like it at first. I just didn't feel like you're comfortable. However, I've gotten used to these things, and it's gotten to the point where, okay, let's Zoom and let's get it going. It's worked, actually ended up working out pretty well. The one hard thing is for me is, and our group is, if you're going to interview somebody from Canada and you don't really know him, that I feel bad for the candidate. I really do. They can't jump on a plane, come into Columbus, sit in the conference room, have lunch and talk for 3 or 4 hours. That's when you see body language. That's when you see how people handle things. That's how you see people interacting with people at the table or have a sense of humor, all that type of stuff. And so that's just the way it is. There's nothing we can do about it. But I feel that people in that situation could be getting shortchanged.
Why are you in a hurry to hire a coach, or are you?
Not really in a hurry. I just think that when you go through this process, and you'll notice that nobody's been hired yet, but there's been a lot of people being interviewed. Mm-hmm. I think that we just want to get everything stabilized. We want to have our coach and have him in place that he can find what he wants as a staff. We can talk about and get through it and just start. I mean, with our club, and I can't speak for others, but I want our coach to be hands-on with our athletes starting now, or as soon as that person's hired. Reach out to Patrick Laine, see how his summer's going after a tough year with Columbus. Start to fly over there, meet with him, do whatever you have to do. I remember when Barry Trotz took over in Washington, one of his first jobs was he jumped on a plane, flew over and met with Ovechkin in Russia, in Moscow. Hmm. Obviously it worked. So these are the types of things when you get things in order. I don't think, John, that you can rush it if you're not sold on what you want to do as to who you're going to hire. But if you do have somebody, let's get to it and get going.
The Stanley Cup playoffs march on. Teams emerging for the final four. And we'd be remiss if we didn't ask JD a little bit about that. We'll do that after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon with you on the podcast today. John Davidson, president of Hockey Ops for the Columbus Blue Jackets once again.
Before we get into the Stanley Cup playoffs, we have to ask him about one guy, Bob. What's going on with Seth Jones, John?
Who?
Seth Jones.
Hey, you know, John, I don't know if you've met Seth before, but he's a great kid. Just a great, well, not a kid anymore either. He's a great guy. He's a great hockey player.
The whole family is. The whole family is. I spent some time around Caleb in Edmonton.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and the mom's heavily involved, takes care of her kids. It's good. The whole Seth thing is interesting. He's had discussions, as we all know. We've decided with both camps to keep them in-house, which we're going to. But my thinking is pretty easily, you can get through it quickly. We want Seth to play with the Blue Jackets. We want him there for a long time and a long-term deal. It's going to be up to him. He can think his way through it. And then when that gets determined, we will either open our arms wide open and say, welcome, let's get going here. Or if he decides that he's not going to sign a long-term, then we're going to have to do what's right for our franchise and check the marketplace out. It's there's no more to it than that. It's just business one and 1A. There it is.
Well, to be the devil's advocate, that's a different philosophy than you had the year that you had Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky.
But we were in a different spot. I mean, okay. We were in a place where we were a pretty good hockey team at that time. We knocked off Tampa Bay. We lost, I believe it was to Boston in six. And that series, in my opinion, the sixth game, we hit six or seven goalposts. So that was a great series. And Boston went on and lost in seven in the finals to St. Louis. So we were a good hockey club right at that point in time. We can't do that right now. I mean, Panarin came to us. And we tried like heck to keep him in Columbus, but he wanted to go to New York. It was that simple, big city. Bobrovsky had an opportunity to hit the jackpot financially, which he did with Florida. And then with Seth, it's just different. He's got a year left on his deal at a real good number for teams looking at with a cap. And we just can't afford to let Seth walk and have nothing as we open our left hand and nothing as we open our right hand. We need something back. We've got to build the franchise.
Will he be in training camp?
I think so. As far as I know, that's the plan right now. Okay. I hope so. If not, that means things have been determined and somebody's blown our doors off with an offer. So it's all up in the air. It's all going to stay in house. We'll just see how it goes.
I'm going to monopolize this for a while because you mentioned you have three first round picks.
Yeah.
Three first round picks in a year where there wasn't very much of junior hockey in Canada. College hockey did get going. There was some European hockey. This may not be the greatest year to have three first round picks.
Or it could be a great year to have three first round picks.
Okay, Yarmo.
You know, there could be somebody picked at 28 that maybe should have gone at 8. Who knows? So it could the scouts, I have to give them credit. I can't speak for the Columbus scouts, but I can speak for the Rangers scouts because I was working with them all year. Those guys put a lot of time in. They lifted every rock possible to look underneath. They video, zoom, 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 going to as many games as humanly possible. And they'd open in this part of the country, they'd all run there and watch games, or in British Columbia for a week, they'd run there and watch games. And I give them a lot of credit. And we had that, speaking of the Zoom world, holy smokes, those kids were probably Zoomed out because we were. And it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting to see, do the teams at the draft pick pretty much what you thought they would, or is there going to be things come out of left field or right field like you'd never expected before? It's going to be very different.
All right. Enough for the moment, Mr. Shannon.
Yeah, I'm going to have a sip of coffee and just enjoy myself.
Can we move to the
you, Bob? Hey, Bob, it's almost your show. So go ahead.
No, it's totally my show. And don't you forget it. I'm intrigued. I want to ask you about the performance of the Montreal Canadiens. John and I have, of course, I don't say necessarily debated, this, but one of the things that I kind of observed was, I mean, this was a great team coming out of the gate. They came flying out, had COVID problems, had a lot of games they had to play, lost their goaltender during the regular season, tumbled to fourth in the division, were one of the worst teams record-wise going into the playoffs, and really were given no chance to get by the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then no chance to get by the Winnipeg Jets. They did not back into this. They are there on merit, and they have now won seven consecutive
mm-hmm. games? Yeah.
Seven consecutive games.
Yeah, and had the lead in all seven, and never lost the lead in seven straight games.
Did we, I mean, I want to use the word, John, underestimate, but that's too obvious. Clearly, we all underestimated them.
Yeah.
But did you see something in this team that maybe I didn't see?
No, I don't think so. The only thing I can say is there's been nothing normal for a long period of time now. Anywhere to do with sports, anywhere to do with life, there's nothing normal. And so I'm not surprised when these things happen because there's nothing normal. However, when you dig into it, obviously they've committed to playing a brand of hockey that makes a lot of sense, especially with the playoffs. They've had great discipline both on the ice and with penalty taking, et cetera. It's anchored by Carey Price.
Yeah.
If you give him a chance to make one save and not have to worry too much about second and third saves, or stay away from two-on-ones and three-on-ones and three-on-twos, he's going to be really good. And he is really good. And I think that when you have, and I know Petrie's hurt right now. I know that Chariot's been being really good. There's another couple of D that have really stepped up. They have some size back there, which is very helpful with the teams they've played. And you start adding it up. And they were doing a lot of this without a power play. And now it's starting to get a little bit of life to it. The Caulfield thing really, I think, has boosted them. He generates. But their discipline level, the way they play the game by staying above the puck, not giving up the craziness, how you can get into a game and trade chances. They're not doing that. And then most of their team has really stepped up. And the veteran players like Perry, I mean, he just every game, one or two times, he almost scores. He does score. And you start adding all this up. They're on a roll. They're just on a roll. I as a player, was on a team in 1979, so many hundreds of years ago. We got on a roll, and we ended up losing to Montreal in the finals. They were one of the great teams ever assembled. But when you get on a roll, I mean, it just, you want to play. You want to play every day. You just want to go. You want to play. And that seems like that's what they're doing. They're mentally in a really, really good place. And if they have any issues whatsoever, Carey Price is there all the time.
Actually, you two things came to mind there, John. Is first of all, when you were in St. Louis, you had four big defensemen, including a guy like Edmondson, who's in Montreal now. And they have four big defensemen back there. Right. Size on the blue line really still makes a difference at times.
I think it does. I really do, John.
And then when you talk about 79, look at that Montreal team that you played against with, you know, Savard and Lapointe and
Robinson
and Larry Robinson.
Yeah, that, about those big three. And you look at Tampa Bay. They got some big D back there. You know, Hedman. You've got Sergachev's a good sized kid. Chernak.
Yeah,
Chernak. He's huge and he's strong, really strong. They added Savard, even though he's been hurt. He's a big guy. These guys can box out. As soon as the puck, you see with Montreal and you watch the game, as soon as the puck goes back to the point, it could be a point shot. Those guys are boxing out the smaller four. They can't get there. They can't get to the net. And then if Carey Price can see half the puck, he's going to stop it. That's just what it is. I really agree with you. We noticed that in the bubble when we were watching games last year when the start of the playoffs. The bigger team to defense, even Carolina, they got some good-sized defensemen back there. You know, and Slavin and Pesci and even Hamilton. He's not a physical guy, but he's big. I agree with you totally.
Not so many weeks ago, you were a Ranger, and I assume you adopted the hatred of the Islanders.
No. He's always had the hatred of the Islanders. Well, are you kidding me?
when you play here back in the day, the Philadelphia Broad Street Bullies, that was some battle every night. Doesn't matter if it was in Philadelphia, the old Spectrum, or in Madison Square Garden. And then there was headed over the bridge into Long Island to play the Islanders. That to me was the greatest. You didn't have to even think about getting up for a game. You were going to hockey's version of a hockey war. You're going to battle. Philadelphia was a little bit more nasty, spearing, all that type of stuff. The Islanders was just go to old-fashioned battles. They had a player there. His name was Bobby Nystrom, who was as tough as nails. And I had played junior hockey with as a teammate in Calgary many years ago. And it was just a battle. It was fantastic. I can't talk enough about how great those games were, how passionate they were, how nasty they were, and we all loved them.
Bob, just as a quick aside, so a preseason game, Islanders Rangers. I'm in New York. I don't know why I'm in New York, but John and I go to this preseason game at the Garden. We both of us are not as nimble as we used to be. We lumber up the stairs towards the press box. The people are chanting JD's name as we go up to the press box. And in a preseason game, there's a bench clearing brawl. And the place is going bananas because it's Islanders Rangers. It's September. Nobody cares. They got to beat the Islanders and they got to beat the Rangers. In many ways, I don't think there's any rivalry like it.
You know, there's a great story. Many years ago, there was an exhibition game with the Flyers and the Rangers at Madison Square Garden. The Rangers had hired Fred Shiro from Philadelphia, where he'd won two cups, to be the Ranger coach. The league got mad. We ended up, as a Ranger team, having to give Philadelphia a first-round pick. Turned out to be Kenny Linsman. So anyway, the game is in New York. One of the players for the Rangers is Paul Stewart, who went on to be the referee. Mm-hmm. He was a tough guy. So he bought like $500-$600 worth of tickets. Now, back in that day, that $500 or $600 today would be $3,000-$4,000. That was a lot of money for exhibition game tickets for his friends and family. The game starts. Within 2 minutes, the brawl's on and Paul Stewart's tossed out of the game. He bought all those tickets for all his friends. He didn't last 2 minutes. He was gone. The Flyers were at the Ranger bench. They were trying to get at Fred Shiro. It was just a melee. And great memories, just great memories. It was like playing hockey out west, John, back in the junior days with the Medicine Hat Tigers and the Edmonton Oil Kings and the Calgary Centennials. It was a blast.
So the Islanders are on the verge of moving on. We chatted a bit about this. What's the secret sauce there?
Well, they're pretty big too. They have third and fourth line that can really play and punish. I thought they got outplayed pretty good last night. Rask had a tough night, and I thought Boston was a better team, but sometimes hockey's not fair. The Islanders play a game that when the season starts, they play it right through, including the playoffs. And it's a defense-first mentality. They don't like to give you much. You have to earn everything. And they're not a young team. They've been at it for a while. They've got a couple of players that aren't older, like Barzal or Dobson, the defenseman. But they're a very experienced, older team. And they're built for this. Coach, they're well-managed. And nothing would surprise me with them. This is when we're getting down to whoever wins the series, Boston's going to be hard to knock off. Boston or the Islanders, the way Tampa Bay is going, Vegas, Colorado, and Montreal is on fire. This is going to be really interesting to see this. I'm really looking forward to the Final Four. There's different teams the way they're built. But boy, and the other thing, too, it's going to help Montreal, I would think, is playing in front of crowds. When you watch Montreal play, and there's very few people in the building, you watch, yeah, it's good hockey. They play and they're playing well. You switch to another game, and you oh my God, what? It's like it's 100 miles an hour. People are going crazy. It's It's just utterly wild. What a difference. And that may help them once they get playing. I don't know where they're going to play. I don't know if it's going to be in Canada or all the games in the States or what.
No, I think
they're going to play in Canada.
They're going to play in Canada. The federal government announced it on Sunday.
Oh, really? So. Oh, really? Yeah. I missed that. Oh, good. Good.
Well, you've been busy.
How many people are they going to allow in the building?
I think it'll increase for the next round in Quebec. So.
Oh, good, good, yeah. Good, good.
Well, but increase from 500.
No, 2,500. They've had 2,500. It'll 2,500, get to 5.
That's right.
It'll get to 5,000, I think. So, like in the old days at the corral, John.
With the boards 5 feet high.
Yeah, yes. That's right.
Hey, it was a great place to play junior.
Hey, before we let you go, just what it's part of the sport. But when do you stop saying we? For a team you used to be with, and when do you stop saying we when you work for a team?
You know, that's just takes time. We had a meeting in the conference room in Columbus about 3 days ago, and I said, you know, when we, I caught myself because I was talking about the Rangers, and it's hard. It really is. I feel bad for my grandkids. They don't know who the hell I work for or who to pull for. You know, Dad, what's Papa doing? Rangers or Blue Jackets? Or
At least it's the same color. Same colors.
Yeah, I just tell them to hang on to the memorabilia because you just never know.
Well, listen, you know we wish you more success in Columbus. You know, as a Columbus boy, they have a warm spot in my heart, and we wish you well, short term and long term. And we don't doubt that you'll have another extended reign there. So all the best to you.
Thank you.
Stay safe.
It's always good.
Appreciate it. You too, guys.
Always good to keep Jeff Rimmer in line too, because he was getting a little morose at the end. So this will be good for Rimmer.
And he'll hear about that. He'll be calling you.
Trust me.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks, JD.
Stay safe. Appreciate it.
John Davidson, back after these messages. McCown and Shannon back with you to wrap it up again. Our thanks to John Davidson.
So when you got fired, did you have
six? I was not fired.
Okay. When you had your contract not renewed.
Yes.
Did you have six or seven offers within like 4 days? I mean, could you imagine that? I mean, he's...
I know exactly how many I had.
One.
Four.
Did you really? Good for you.
No, not within days.
Well, we're talking... I mean, that was the amazing part, I think, of what John said was that, you know, within a very quick period of time, the phone just started ringing and people said, come here.
Okay,
obviously, he had some TV offers that not many people know about.
Well, I'm sure. You're right. But the hockey business is a very tight business and everybody knows everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
In broadcasting, nobody knows anybody else. You know them from afar. You know, there's no working relationship in any way, shape, or form. But look at John Davidson is obviously been a good, accomplished hockey executive in St. Louis, in Columbus. You know, I was a little surprised he left Columbus because I knew he loved living there.
But he was a Ranger thing. Right. Yeah. Right.
And going back, I think Columbus fans should be thrilled that they got him back.
Yeah.
Because this kind of thing doesn't happen every day.
You talk about the hockey world. I think the hockey world probably looked at what, particularly in St. Louis. I mean, St. Louis, they were in financial peril when John went there.
Yes, they were.
And John did a really good job. And I admit John's a friend of mine. I have a huge bias, but John did a really good job of creating financial stability for the organization, not just on the hockey side, but for the organization. And in many ways, he did similar in Columbus in building stability on the hockey side there. I've been dismissed a few times. I would love to tell you that I had six or seven offers within 4 days. I was very jealous when he said that.
Well, he's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
Not everybody. In fact, almost nobody gets as many opportunities. It's just a testament to the kind of person he is. And and the kind of work that he does.
Well, we're just going to have to figure out when he has to stop saying we for the Rangers and start saying we for the Jackets.
We don't even have to think about it twice. It's his problem, not ours.
Yeah, okay.
On that note, we shall bid everybody a fond adieu and move along. We will rejoin you again tomorrow if the creek don't rise for John Shannon, Bob McCowan. Thanks for listening or watching. Goodbye, everybody.